Listen to your heart song. Then sing it out, sing it out, sing it out, sing it out. Oh. 'Cause you can't love nobody else if you can't love yourself. Love yourself, go love yourself.
You can't love nobody else if you can't love yourself. So beautifully said. Love in the 21st Century is made possible by the generous contributions of KZFR members and by CSU Chico Continuing Education's Open University. Open University provides an opportunity for individuals to take Chico State classes on a space available basis without going through the admissions process. More information about Open University is available by calling CSU Chico Continuing Education at 898-6105 or by visiting rce.csuchico.edu. You can go and continue your education. We support you at Love in the 21st Century.
So,
go Wildcats, absolutely. So, as promised, we're going to be having a conversation with Eartha Shanti about self-love. And as I was mentioning there at the end of the hour, it just seems such a poignant place to begin our conversation for this new year with self-love and how it plays a part in our lives, really, in all the things that we do. So thank you so much, Eartha, for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. So, I mean, I can give a general idea of how I know you in a relationship, but I'd also like you to share, you know, how your role in our community. I've been, you know, involved with you in lots of different ways as a community activist, educator, yoga instructor, nutritionist. There's just so many different avenues that you've shown up in my life and helped to guide and share information about how to take better care of oneself in these times that we're having. So perfect. I felt so perfect when Sky brought up the possibility of having you on for self-love, because as I know you, it seems like everything that you've shared with me over the time of our relationship here in Chico comes back down to self-love and loving yourself.
And that it really is where love begins, is with loving ourselves. And I think it's worth taking a minute to just talk about what does love mean? Because I think even that word is so supercharged, you know, like in many languages, there are many different words for different kinds of love. Like the love that a mother has for her daughter is different than the love that she has for her son, and the love that we have for our own mothers, and or that we have for the earth or for our favorite food or clothes, all different kinds of love, but all still in, you know, one word encapsulating so many different emotions. And I think one thing that can happen is that we can confuse love with emotions that don't really reflect love. I've seen this happen often in parent-child relationships, where a parent will actually be expressing fear for their child in the name of love. Mm. And love and fear are really opposite sides of the same coin. And love is going to be more trusting, and love is going to be more accepting, and love is going to be unconditional. Love is going to be there no matter what the conditions look like. And so when we start mixing in fear, or we start mixing in even walls, or we put up barriers to another, well, I love you, but there's no buts with love. Love is pure and love is true. And that doesn't mean that you take someone's bad energy. You can say, I love you, and I'm going to choose to go over and to do this right now, and all the best to you. But that's a different vibe than I love you, but I have a wall.
Right.
Different vibe. And so I think that's an important place to start, that love is appreciating, and love is, I like to say, we give people the benefit of the trust anyway. It comes from the saying, the benefit of the doubt.
Right.
But again, doubt is a fear-based word. So let's give people the benefit of the trust that they are who they are, they're doing what they're doing, and then we get to make our choices. But we make our choices from a light space and a place of knowing that everyone's going to figure out in their own time, and we get to choose. And that's one of the wonderful things about this creation. So I think another thing that comes up a lot about love too is the word forgiveness. And if we're really talking about unconditional love, then there's really nothing to forgive, because when two people come together and make a situation that's something that maybe we wouldn't want to repeat, for instance, two people made that situation. Now, one person can honor and love that is not something they want to continue and step away from that. And they can continue to love the other person and know that they are where they're at. But even stepping into the place of forgiveness means there's judgment there. And that's not unconditional. So it's a really fine line. And I think that from where most of us are, forgiveness is an important thing. But I think it's worth considering possibly that even forgiveness is not love. Because if we're forgiving, then we're first judging and we're first putting conditions on our love. So I just always like to throw that into the conversation just to push it a little bit.
Right. And I think that is kind of like expanding that concept that you were starting out with about self-love, or about love in general. Because like you said, our culture doesn't really have a good way of explaining the differences in the ways that we do love or what love means. And it's a very conditioned type of love. And so the love and forgiveness go really, go hand in hand together, because we don't really understand the concept of unconditional love in kind of a broader sense in our community. So thanks for bringing that to the forefront.
Yes, as we head toward the light, we head toward releasing those conditions on our love.
Right, everything is okay in the guise of unconditional love, that whatever, however you show up is okay. You don't necessarily need to ask for forgiveness. But as we were talking earlier before we got on the air, a lot of that challenge, I feel like, begins with ourselves, because we have so many challenges with loving and accepting ourselves and forgiving ourselves because of something that was taught to us as we were growing up, or a message that we received, throughout our life. So it's hard to be able to practice that forgiveness or acceptance of others, because we're doing that so much to ourselves of, oh, we haven't lived up to this certain expectation.
And that's why it's such a great place to start the conversation about love with self-love, because if we don't love ourselves and accept ourselves, then we can't love or accept anybody else. And as we put conditions on our love for ourselves, we also do need to forgive ourselves, which to me can be the hardest thing. I remember one time openly expressing my anger in a very inappropriate way, and this was years ago, of course. And just wanting to crawl into a hole, I just felt so bad about myself. And it took me days to release it and let it go. And on the one hand, it definitely made me super clear about who and how I wanted to be in the world. And so in that sense, it did its job. But on the other hand, it just made me see how forgiving myself was really the hardest work of all. The person that made me so angry, that made me go to that place I didn't want to go, it was easy for me to forgive them because I was just so being so hard on myself, So were you going to say something?
I was just thinking about, as you both were talking about forgiveness, what came to mind for me was the idea of acceptance, and I think they kind of go hand in hand. When talking about forgiving somebody for this or forgiving yourself for that, it's more about accepting what it is that has just happened, right?
Much more positive word, yeah.
I think that there's a lot of negative connotation that goes along with the concept of forgiveness. And so when we say that we can accept whatever that situation is, or whatever that feeling is, or whatever that thing is, it allows you to transcend into the next level of wherever you're trying to go.
Right? Yes. I was just thinking that, as Eartha was talking, and definitely now as you were adding, Sky, they're stepping stones, this concept of self-love, and then this thing of self-forgiveness, and then it's when I radically accept myself for who I am, everything's okay. I don't need to put these judgments and labels on me or anybody else, and everything's okay the way it shows up. So it's we're getting there.
Right.
Yeah, and for me, when we talk about love, unconditional love, I think it's about that acceptance, accepting people for who they are and where they're at. And I know that I've struggled with that in the past. It's something that I'm continuously working on in the present, you know, to accept the people that I love where they're at and try and forgive them and forgive myself for maybe putting too much expectation on relationships or situations, for sure.
Right.
So now that we've talked a little bit about love in general, do you want to give us your particular view on self-love?
Well, like we started to say, to love others, we have to love ourselves, right? And we've kind of created a word in some of the workshops that I've given, and we like to say self-full. And it's kind of a spinoff of the word selfish, because I was saying that I liked the word selfish, because unless I took care of myself first, then I didn't really have anything to give anyone else. But other people said no, it had too many negative connotations. They couldn't deal with the word selfish. So we came up with the word self-full mm-hmm. as a way to explain that, and I think that really having kids was what really taught me this, was that in order for me to like be there as a mom and loving and patient and there present with my children, I really had to take care of myself. I wasn't one of those moms who like gave it all away. I took care of myself first, and then I had something to give. And so I think as we get into this discussion of what does self-love mean, like that's the root of being a loving person, is really to fill ourselves up with love for ourselves. And I think I think one of the things that's really indicative of our self-love is our self-talk, and the language that we use is really important. And like, for instance, this is something I see all the time. Like someone's walking out the door and they go, oh, I forgot my water. Oh, I'm getting old. I don't remember things anymore. And I go, well, did you forget it or did you actually remember it? You know, and to me, they walked out the door and they remembered their water. And so as I'm talking to myself, am I talking to myself as someone who remembers, or am I talking to myself as someone who's getting old and forgets? And I see this so often. That's why I bring up this example that, like, please, as we get old, don't put that on yourself. You know what I mean? Like, if you remember something, then you remembered it. You didn't forget it. And if you did forget it, so what? It doesn't mean you're getting old. It just means you have to go back and get it or make a change in your plan. But we don't need to, like, put this on ourselves of, like, oh, every time I forget something, it means I'm getting old.
Right. I remember when we were talking about it earlier that, you know, being glad that you remember, that the emphasis of being happy about it, not necessarily like being down on yourself. And so I was saving this for when we were on the air, that I have a friend that was sharing with me their own experience of, you know, before they go to bed, they just kind of just unravel the whole day. And they're just like, kind of like, in a way, belittling themselves. Like, I didn't do enough. I didn't show up in these ways. And it's like, wow, like how draining that must feel. In a sense, fortunate that it only happens before you go to bed. But I mean, it doesn't necessarily rejuvenate you to then wake up the next morning if you've been making yourself feel that way before you went to sleep. So I'm wondering what insights you might share about the whole self-talk concept with somebody who's saying that this is like a repeated pattern for themselves in the evening.
I mean, I think that anytime anyone is going to bed thinking, oh, I didn't do enough, you could very easily say, I did everything I could do. You know, it's really that simple.
Right.
Of like, whatever you're saying to yourself that's belittling yourself, you can say the opposite thing, and it's also true. And so it's all a matter of perspective. And we've just been trained, most of us since early childhood, by parents and teachers who were noticing our shortcomings instead of our gifts, to notice our own shortcomings instead of our gifts. And so especially right before we go to bed is a really important time to just be thankful for what we were able to accomplish, for the comfort that we felt in the day, for the hugs that we got that day, for the smiles we were able to share, and to really like listen to our self-talk. And to the extent that our self-talk is not reflecting the self that we want to be, to just change it. I think one really great tool that we can use is mirror work, where just look yourself in the eye in the mirror and just say, you know what? I really love you. You look really good today. I really love your hair today, or whatever it is. Just be silly and fun with it. And just really tell yourself how much you love yourself. And I'll guarantee that for many people, this will be a challenge, and you'll like feel really silly, and you'll really want to make sure no one's looking. But pretty soon it becomes a game where you can be out in public and pass a mirror and just strike a pose and love yourself, because there's something to love in all of us. And if we can't find it in ourselves, then others aren't going to find it either. And so if we want to be loved by others and we want to love others, then we really need to first go deep and find that in ourselves. So mirror work is something we can do in private. We're in all, most of us, in front of a mirror every day. And so we could just take a minute to say, I love you, Eartha. I think you're awesome. You know?
Yeah, absolutely.
Makes a difference.
You know, as you were speaking, you were talking about how, you know, as we're growing up, most of the language that is directed towards us is, oh, you know, you should be doing better, or you're not doing good enough. And, you know, it really brought to mind for me that a lot of my negative self-talk that I've held on to, that old programming, stems from hearing a lot of that as a child. And so I think it's a really good point to make that language is really important, especially when we're talking to our children. I bet that if you were to ask a majority of the individuals who have low self-esteem or self-worth currently, you would find that they also were entrenched in this kind of language growing up. So I thought that was a really interesting point.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's entrenched in our culture,
yeah,
really, to find fault with others, and especially to find fault with children, because they are, in a sense, less powerful. Mm-hmm. And so it's easy to put them down to push ourselves up in a certain way.
And just as a side note, I just, one of the things that I remember, Eartha, most vivid for me is, once upon a time, you handed me a deck of cards. I call them my Eartha cards, and they all have these I am statements. I am creative. I am beautiful. I am energy. And I still have those. I think you probably gave those to me about 5 or 6 years ago, and they're plastered all over my house. And they've been very helpful. So I think that writing down and reflecting to yourself, if you are uncomfortable with the mirror work at first, that's another really good way to kind of segue into the mirror work. Writing some cards or writing the affirmations works really well also, in my experience.
Right. And just tell, you know, if you're pretty good at something, I'm pretty good at that. Mm-hmm. You know, that feels good.
I'm awesome.
Yeah, I'm actually pretty good at that. It feels really good. And it brings me to my next point that I just wanted to throw in, is that we do live in an energetic universe. And so that the energy we put out is the energy that we attract to each other. So if I'm someone that says, oh, I have the worst hair, then, I mean, I actually see that my hair responds to my thoughts. And if I think my hair is really cool and I like it to be thick and I like it to be full, like on the days when it's thick and full, I'm like, oh yeah, I like my hair today, you know? And on the days when it's kind of meh, I just put a hat on and I don't even think about it, you know? And the same thing with my body. On the days when I feel really like how I just love to feel, energetic and strong and powerful, then I own it. And on the days when I don't, I just do something else and ignore it. You know, I really, when it comes to myself and my body and my self-image, you know, I'm not there 100% of the time, but I only energize it when I'm there, you know. And if I'm not there, it's okay. I accept myself. It's good all the different ways, but I like it when it's the best, you know. And so I've gotten pretty good at kind of playing a game with myself of, Can I make my hair thicker? I think I can. Can I? I could go on, but I won't.
The powers of our minds and the powers of our thoughts, they're far more powerful than we often give them credit for. And just to throw in there some of my own practices in terms of the self-talk that I picked up in the last few weeks is doing a gratitude journal, mm-hmm, in the evening. And I have to say, it's probably one of the few things that I've done consecutively every day since I started. And it's because it has made a difference. And really, the funny thing and the reason I started doing it is that my mornings are usually pretty good. Most way through the day, I'm like investing all this energy that I have into the work that I'm doing. And then by the end of the night, I'm kind of tapped out and I am just like ready for bed. And, you know, maybe a little challenging to be around at that point, honestly. And it was, you know, inspired so that I could have something to focus on that was positive in the evening and then have a more positive attitude in the evening. And it's been working. It's been working because now the moment I start feeling that frustration because I'm tired or because not everything's worked out the way I want it to, I start thinking about the positive things I can write in my journal. So it's definitely, you know, it works to shift our perspective onto the things that
bring us pleasure rather than the things that, you know, are bringing us discomfort.
It really does. And people say that our research shows that people who spend as little as like 2 or 3 minutes writing 5 things a day that they're thankful for experience more happiness in their lives. So one of the easiest, most effective tools that you can do is to keep some kind of a gratitude journal.
True story.
Yeah.
True story.
So, Eartha, is there a sort of a roadmap or a guideline that you'd like to share with us that are going to help some of our folks out there that might be listening?
Well, almost all the teaching that I do uses the sevenfold piece as a guideline. And I like to use it because I think it just provides such a great framework for any kind of health and peace work that we're talking about.
And that's the sevenfold piece?
Right, right. Yeah. It comes from an ancient Essene tradition, and it was traditionally practiced to cultivate peace in these 7 areas. 7 areas are the body, the mind, the family, the community, the culture, Mother Earth, and Creator Spirit. But I find that that outline works as well for health, and it definitely works for self-love too. So we could start with self-love in the body, you know, and I think because we live in such a bizarre culture about body image that many people have issues about their bodies, and I just think it's time to give that up. Like, we all have different shaped bodies. There's beauty in every body, and as we love our bodies however they are, knowing that in 3 months most of the cells in our bodies replace themselves. So if we spend 3 months replacing the cells in our body with positive thoughts and fruits and vegetables, I mean, that we can completely change our whole body. There's no reason to be sad about your body. Wherever your body is great, and you can move it to wherever you want it to be. And your talk about your body creates the body that you have. So we need to find words that are accepting of our bodies and that are uplifting of our bodies, that each body is unique and each body is beautiful, and so many different ways to conceive of an image that's positive.
I would add to that connecting to your body. So mm-hmm. like in that language, as well as just like physically connecting with your body, because I think that sometimes it becomes easy to sort of detach from what's going on in your body because of those thoughts we might have, those negative feelings we have about our body, and also because we're such a cerebral culture. It's like, think about this and think about that, and it's like, get into your body. Like, we had someone last year come on and speak about feeling into your body, and how they talked about, like, how are your toes doing right now? It's like, well, I really haven't thought about my toes all day, you know, unless you stub your toe. You don't really, like, think about, like, these body parts that you have, and really getting into your body, whether that's through movement or, like, body meditation and focusing on different parts of your body, but really getting connected to what's going on, because really, all the time, it's trying to tell you stuff.
Right, and just touching your body, you know, the tapping, I think that's one of the most, the EFT process, I think that's one of the most effective things about it, is it brings us into our bodies. And just like tapping your arms, I love to, in the tub, I massage my legs and my feet, and I, you know, I tap my face, and at dance church, I usually, when I really reach that place, I'll, like, you know, do the Tarzan and tap my chest, because it feels so good just to, like, really touch your body, you know?
Like, oh, wow, this is my body.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah.
It's showing up.
Right.
Yeah, I have found that when I'm in my body and my body is feeling good, that it typically affects everything, my mood, the way I look, the way I speak, the way I interact with people. So being in your body is really important. I took a mindfulness-based stress reduction course recently, and one of the first things that we talk about or they teach you is the body scan, so being in your body, you know, starting from your toes and all the way up to your head, just being in your body for 20 to 40 minutes. And it's a struggle. You know, I think that it's a real struggle to be in your body completely and not in your head and not outside of your head. But I have found that to be a really good practice.
Definitely. I mean, each of these areas that we're talking about, you know, we could do a whole show on each of these areas. So I think we'll just touch
yes.
a little bit on each area. So self-love of the body. The next one would be self-love of our mind. What does that mean to, like, practice self-love in my mind? Well, the first thing that I think of is my thoughts, is what do I think about myself? Do I think I'm getting old and forget things? Or do I think, you know, I look back at that pictures of myself 10 years ago and I think, wow, I should have really appreciated that a lot more. Because in our youthening culture, getting old gracefully definitely takes some work on our minds of like appreciating this whole process of aging and loving it, you know?
I'm turning 40 this year, so I'm holding on to that thought of I'm loving 40.
Do it.
Yeah, and just, you know, just thinking about what we say to ourselves about, like what you're saying about our bodies and what we're able to do. It's like, I know so many people that are, you know, just turning 30 or in their mid-30s that are like, oh, my life's behind me. And it's like, I just started being like, isn't that so terrible? Like that your life is already halfway over and you're not even like halfway through the amount of time you're going to live. So like on average, if you take, you know, you eat well enough and you take care of yourself, whether you not do that exactly or not, you'll probably be, you know, between your 70s to your 90s that you're living. So if you're living till you're 70, then okay, you're going to spend the next half of your life as an old person. That doesn't sound very awesome. It sounds very limiting. And if you say live longer than that, you're going to spend even more of a percentage of your life as an old person. And again, limiting. And I just really love seeing these things on the internet of, you know, like 90-year-old women completing like triathlons. It's like, yes. Okay, like age and your concept of what you can and cannot do is not truly limited by your body. And it's more limited by your mind and your mind's ability to think about what you want to achieve. Like, can I achieve these things? If you tell yourself you can or you tell yourself you can't, you're right.
Exactly. So, you know, other things we can do to cultivate self-love in our minds are to spend some time in meditation, however that looks for you, of just really working to get out of our minds and into our bodies, spending time in nature, deep breathing. These are all ways that we can bring energy to clear our minds and calm our minds. But I think the main thing really to focus on is to think about our thoughts and what kind of thoughts we think about ourselves, and to start working to transform those thoughts into positive things, because we've all got things to appreciate about ourselves. So self-love of the mind. Self-love of the family is next. And here's, I think, where the forgiveness part comes up the most, obviously. I love the quote about forgiveness. Like, there's a couple ways to say it, but one way I've heard is like, holding a grudge, which would be the opposite of forgiveness, I guess, is like drinking poison and expecting the other person to die. Whereas actually when I hold a grudge, I'm the one that's getting poisoned. And so whether the other person deserves my forgiveness or not, it doesn't matter. I deserve my forgiveness, because if I don't forgive, then I'm the one that's suffering. And I think for whatever reason in our culture, a lot of us need to forgive our mothers. And I could go off on that, but it's another time. But please just forgive your mom. It's not a supportive culture for mothers, and mothers do their best with what they have, and most mothers wish they had done better. And you're going to be a happier person if you can forgive your mother and accept her and love her for the good times that you had together.
And I want to know if you maybe can talk a bit about the forgiveness as a process, because as you're saying this, as you're bringing up like the forgiveness of family, and I'm thinking of forgiveness of traumatic events that have happened in my life. And as much as I want to be a loving and forgiving person, sometimes like I literally have a physiological response to the ability to forgive somebody. And it's a process for me. Like, and so I want to know if you can speak to that and what your feelings are.
Right. And forgiveness doesn't mean being best friends necessarily, but it means letting go of the emotional charge, because that emotional charge will make you sick. And so it really means letting go for your own self-love, mm-hmm. for your own self-preservation. Of something that happened in the past is something that happened in the past. Today, you're a beautiful woman, and you're creative and spontaneous and a dynamic part of our community. And all of that comes from all of your experiences. Mm-hmm. So love it all. Mm-hmm. And now is all we have.
Right.
You know, again, it comes down to acceptance, you know, accepting of the past, this thing that I can't seem to get let go of. Like, I just need to accept it. And once I can accept it, then I can let go of it. That has been my experience in forgiveness. You know, I had a lot of anger towards my mother for a very long time. And it wasn't until I was able to accept the past and the things that had happened that I was able to move to a place of forgiveness.
And I think also that no one causes trauma to a child who hasn't been traumatized themselves.
Oh, absolutely.
And so having that level of understanding and love, mm-hmm. that someone who does terrible things has had terrible things done to them, and it comes from a culture of terrible things, and this is a new day, and this is a time of reaching for the light, and reaching for the light means unconditional love, means that we love everybody regardless of conditions. And again, that doesn't mean we have to be best friends, but it means we can be understanding that people who do terrible things have had terrible things happen to them, and that if we've had terrible things to us, we can be the one that creates the new reality, mm-hmm. by loving ourselves anyway, by loving everyone else anyway, and by keeping our focus on where we want to go in creating this new culture that is loving.
Well, and it starts with the family. You know, I've found, you know, in my experience and in my profession, that a lot of the dysfunction that happens, if that's what we want to call it, stems from family systems, right? Intergenerational family systems. And it comes to accepting and forgiveness and moving forward. You know, talking about family is really important.
Yeah, one of the experiences that I was referencing was actually had nothing to do with my family, except that it was sort of like a premeditated energy that my father kind of put out there, I felt like. I was kind of a boisterous teenager, and my dad always told me, like, someone's gonna, you know, so you're gonna say that to the wrong person and something's gonna happen. I'm like, he would like forewarn me of that, and you know, later in life it certainly did. And so it brought up those memories for me, but it was also, like I was saying, a physiological response that, like, literally to be in a certain person's company, I could not stand it. And I wanted to practice the forgiveness. I wanted, you know, I was trying so much to be there, but then really coming down to it, what helped me was just saying, you know, I forgive you to the person, and I forgive me for not being able to be the person that I even want to be in this situation. It's like, I don't want to have to, like, go somewhere else because this is too challenging for me. But until, like, now, where I'm at now, where it would be okay for me to be around that person, it wasn't, and I needed to be okay with that and to accept it.
And listening to your body being uncomfortable is a really important part of that, of like, I'm working on this forgiveness and I'm working on this acceptance, and right now I need to be somewhere else to be comfortable in my body. That mm-hmm. is a perfectly valid place to be with it.
Well, yes. Boundaries, you know, I think that talking about self-love is about setting boundaries for yourself and for others and respecting those.
It's a step.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Definitely. So love and family and forgiveness.
So our next, we'll how are we doing on time?
We're at 5:34.
Okay. So community is our next category. And the notes I've made to myself are to build our community, to share our gifts, and to invest in community. And I myself have experienced this year with a challenge that I went through and reached out for help to the community and was so showered with support that it, like, I felt like the Grinch in that one story in The Grinch Who Stole Christmas, where his heart is all little and then it gets all big. And I felt like that experience in my heart, where my heart was just like exploded with the amount of support that I got back. And so many people said, you know, thank you so much for everything you've given to the community. And I did at a certain point when I adopted the Sevenfold Peace, this process as a young woman, that was my most challenging one. I didn't know what that meant, community, but I guess I kind of figured it out.
I think your community loves you.
I definitely have felt it this year.
Yeah.
And so, and ultimately, investing in our community is self-love too. Again, as I've experienced this year, of having a challenge, asking for help and getting that help, and just seeing that everything I put out, I didn't put out in order to get. I put out because I wanted to follow this process. But when I needed it, it came back to me. And that was really an amazing experience.
As we talk about that, and we think, you know, like how you said that you had a
challenge, you know, completely wrapping your mind around it, but, you know, thinking about how our culture views community versus, you know, the village mentality versus like living in an isolated nuclear home, it's, you know, here in Chico, that concept, I think, is played out a little bit, you know, better than in most communities, that like there are other people to fall back on. There are people that like are helping to supervise your kids when they're, when you're out at a gathering or an event. And it's really because we cannot exist isolated from each other. We have this like false idea that's been created by our society that, yeah, you know, two parents, their kids, you know, totally maintains the life. Yeah, but we forget about like the school system that's educating your child, or the doctor that you take your kid to. Like, they're part of your community, whether or not you're connected and feel connected to them. They are. They're part of your lives. And so in Chico, we're very blessed to have more direct connections that are actually a bit more intimate, in the sense that we know each other's lives and can support each other to having more fulfilled lives.
Right. Right, and we have to put it out there to make it happen. That's absolutely the really important thing, is really taking that step of offering your gifts that you have to share, and allowing people into your lives on that level.
That's such a big one, allowing people into your lives, because,
it's transformative.
It is.
And I would say, you know, as far as community, I talked about last week what love meant for me, and it wasn't until I actually came to this community that I was able to really grasp the concept of self-love and love in general. So community makes a really big difference, in my opinion.
Yeah, it really does. Okay, so self-love in community. So then we have self-love in culture. And I think for a lot of us who are working on self-transformation and creating a better me and a better world, sometimes it's difficult to look at our culture and to find things to love. And I think it's really important that we do that. And the way I do it is by looking for solutions. And especially in this time, when we've got the internet to share so much, there's so many amazing things happen. My favorite one I found this week was about regenerative agroforestry. These farmers in Brazil who are taking land that's been clear cut, totally depleted, and they're allowing the forest to grow back, and they're thinning the forest and using the biomass to build the soil and integrating forest with food crops and just creating these beautiful, beautiful places. And I just want to say more and more and more, and keep looking for the positive stories of what's happening culturally. And I think the other thing that comes up for me in self-love is to love your neighbor, you know, and I mean that on a neighborhood basis and on a worldwide basis, of like, it just makes more sense to like help your neighbor's brother than to kill him, you know, like as we help each other, we're helping ourselves as well. And as we create and reach for understanding of people who seem strange to us, then we're growing that understanding for ourselves as well. And so that as much as that we can allow other people to be who they are, then they will allow us to be who we are. And that's how we can create a more peaceful, more loving world.
Right, because it's definitely more challenging to hate somebody that you know, and somebody that you've had, you know, more connections with. And, you know, thinking about it, like, how many people know their neighbors and have had interactions with them? And the more you get to know them and see them for who they are versus, like, the ideas we've created them to be, makes it a little easier to have a working relationship with them, at least.
Right, right. And that is true of your neighbors down the street, your neighbors across the border, your neighbors around the other side of the planet, that
right.
We're all much more one energy than we are separate. And that as I learn to love myself and I learn to love other people, then that grows the love, and that takes us into a higher dimension, a more light-filled dimension. So self-love with Mother Earth, I mean, it just seems like such a no-brainer that, like, as we nurture the earth, that's going to be good for us. As I take care of the land that I have been allotted, then that's going to be good for us. And I think this reflects back to me in the way I use resources and the way I spend money and the way I use my time and the way I invest myself in the culture that I find myself in, that it all comes back down to the resources that we're extracting from the earth and how we're how we're treating all that, you know. And I'm going to end up by saying to take it easy on yourself. Like, we can't be too hard on ourselves in this process of becoming, because it's a lot. And I think, and especially in regards to the earth, it's very easy to become overwhelmed, and it's very easy to get really down on ourselves, because it's difficult to make changes and to make new choices. But do what you can do, you know. Do your best and bless the rest. Mm-hmm. And as we have to keep accepting ourselves for where we're at, but we also have to keep challenging ourselves to move forward and to keep making more intelligent decisions about where we spend our dollars, how we spend our time, what kind of resources that we're demanding from the earth, what kind of trash is going out there, because we can change it. It can be different. In 100 years, we can make a totally different reality. And that's going to happen from each one of us making small, different decisions in our lives.
Absolutely.
And that ultimately is what's best for me, coming back down to self-love.
Yes, why it plays a part in self-love, because it affects us.
So do we have a few more minutes?
We have a few more minutes.
Okay, so then self-love with Creator Spirit. And for me, two main things come up with this. One is that this is an eternal process that we're in here, that we can't get it wrong, because we never get it done, and we never get it done because it goes on forever. And so this allows some ease into our lives, that we do our best and we do what we can do, and we keep striving to become better, but we don't beat up on ourselves and we don't beat up on other people. And Spirit loves us so much. Like, if we could just remember how much love all of creation has for each one of us for being willing to be here on planet Earth at this time, then we would have no problems with self-love or with self-image or with self-talk, because each one of us is a magnificent star child here with love, here as a creator, here with the power to make whatever kind of world we want to make. And there's a lot of love for each one of us. And so I think that to remember that we are loved by Spirit, however you conceive that, and that this is an eternal game, that we can keep making it better and better, and we can have fun doing it. And that's really the point I want to end with, is to make it fun. You know, if we're not having fun, then we're not living in the light. And I think that we're not really taught to cultivate fun. We're taught to cultivate dollars.
Yes. Responsibility.
And something that's coming to mind when you're sharing, Eartha, is one of my sweetie's things that he always says when he brings you up is, it's good in getting better. He said it's one of the things he learned from you. So, yes, I mean, it's possible that in our lives, it's good and it's getting better. And it's such a radical idea that it's like, I know that for myself, of feeling like, oh, it's too good to be true. And it's like, no, it's good. And it's going to get better. That's what's even more unimaginable, but so deserving at the same time.
Sweet. Perfect place to end.
So if people are interested in finding out more of what you're doing and what you have going on, how can they get in touch? And do you have anything in particular that's coming up soon for people?
Mostly, I'm just working one-on-one with people. I work as a spiritual counselor and a holistic health consultant. I also do private yoga classes, and I do some food prep and counseling around a whole food plant-based diet. And if people want to get a hold of me, it's earthashanti@gmail.com, earthashanti. And yeah, I'd love to connect.
Awesome. earthashanti@gmail.com.
That's right.
Awesome. So thank you so much, Eartha.
Thank you, Eartha.
Thank you. Yeah. Really fun.
Yes. Self-love. It's where it's at. So we're going to get this hour finished up here talking about beloved community with Emily Alma in just a moment.
I would trust a pack of coyotes to guard my little herd of lambs before I'd trust a pack of corporate hucksters to reform America's tax code. Yet Carl Icahn, a noted corporate predator, is fronting for CEOs of a small group of huge multinational conglomerates who are demanding that Congress drastically slash the taxes they owe on foreign sales of their products. This reform would let them escape paying most of the $600 billion in taxes that U.S. law assesses on some $2.6 trillion in profits that they've been hiding in foreign bank accounts. 3/4 of these hidden profits belong to only 50 enormously profitable corporations. Putting the $600 billion they owe into America's public treasury would fund a lot of education, infrastructure repair, green energy, social services, etc. that our people desperately need. But Icahn and Company claim that forgiving this corporate tax debt, quote, would allow the companies to reinvest in the United States, creating thousands of jobs. Notice that verb, allow. They could put this tax windfall into job-creating U.S. investments, but the Iconers do not want Congress to require any sort of patriotic use of the money. Haven't we seen this movie before? Ah, yes, it was in the 2008 Wall Street bailout. They said that if Washington rescued them, they would then invest in Main Street and in middle-class jobs. We did. They didn't. Carl even asserts that the corporate elites are, quote, completely justified in leaving America if they aren't given this tax boondoggle. After all, he says, CEOs have a fiduciary duty to enhance value for their shareholders. This is Jim Hightower saying, what a self-serving crock. Shareholders are not more important or more valuable than workers, consumers, and the common good. To help stop this giveaway, go to AmericansForTaxFairness.org. What do the corporate powers from Wall Street to Walmart have in common? They hate the Hightower Lowdown. You can see why at www.hightowerlowdown.org.
This is Love in the 21st Century, and we are talking about self-love. Earth Ashanti was just with us, and if you are interested in getting connected with her, it's earthashanti@gmail.com. Eartha with an A, Shanti, S-H-A-N-T-I. So, wealth of knowledge, really. And Ecotopia is coming up next with Steve and Susan Chudy every Tuesday from 6 to 7. They will discuss environmental issues with nationally renowned authors and activists. EcoTalk, it's your local link to a global network of folks who know and care about the health care, the health of our planet and healthcare. So thank you. Now we're going to segue and talk about something that's coming up here in a local community, as well as how it ties into self-love, because as we were talking a bit earlier with Eartha Ashanti, it does. So thank you, Emily, for joining us.
It's great to be here. Thank you.
Absolutely. So first off, I want to make sure that we have enough time to let folks know your specific purpose for being here today.
Okay. I'm here for two reasons. One is to talk in general about Dr. Martin Luther King's beloved community, which is a lot about what Eartha was talking about toward the end of this show that she was on. But also on this coming Sunday, January 17th, there's going to be the annual celebration of Dr. Martin Luther King, which has been happening every year for over 38 years.
Wow, the same event for 38 years.
The same event. Nice. Well, changes every year, but it's been going on. People have been carrying the torch, and I'm with a wonderful group of people we're carrying the torch for the third year.
Great.
And it's going to be starting. I'll give you the details of that so you guys can write it down and be sure to be there, because it's going to be really uplifting community connecting time. It starts in the downtown plaza at 3:00 with a rally, and the rally is going to be very high spirited. There's going to be some shared dancing, and as well as some music and some pretty hot speaking and spoken word, and as well as then it moves into a walk around town led by the children, who will be carrying banners that say things like beloved community and Black Lives Matter and things to do with building justice in our world. And then that ends up at Trinity Methodist Church at 4:00 for a really amazing program, which I'll talk about a little bit more, that will last about an hour or so. And then everyone is invited to share a community dinner. And it's all free and family friendly, and all are invited. So this third year that I've been involved with it, it's been packed the last 2 years. We expect it to be packed again, and we just really want everybody to join us, because we're really about inclusiveness and and raising the bar on what beloved community is about. So come one, come all.
Yes.
And I can talk a little bit more about the program right now, or I could talk a little bit more about Dr. King's beloved community.
Well, let's segue a bit and talk about Martin Luther King's beloved community a bit, because as you're saying, the one, come all concept, you know, it really is, that's just exactly how MLK would have it.
Yes. Well, that was one of his basic concepts. That was one of his visions and his goals and his mission in all of the work that he did, always, whether it was specifically about the civil rights movement, whether it was about integration of schools, whether it was integration of lunch counters, or when it became broader and he started seeing the whole world of people, that it went beyond. It never stopped it being focused on the needs of African Americans, but he also saw that poverty was a terrible burden for people all over the world, and certainly in our country, no matter what their ethnicity. And the Vietnam War, he saw that as being a way that people, the poorest people and people of color, were preyed upon by the military-industrial complex. So all of that motivated him to visualize and work toward beloved community. And let me read a little bit. This is a quote from Dr. King. And I should say that our group has adopted building beloved community as our theme for and our vision for what we want in our lives and shared in our community. The end is reconciliation. The end is redemption. The end is the creation of the beloved community. It is this type of spirit and this type of love that can transform opposers into friends. The type of love that I stress here is not eros, a sort of aesthetic or romantic love, not philia, a sort of reciprocal love between personal friends, but it is agape, which is understanding goodwill for all men. Well, now, today he would say all humans. It is an overflowing love which seeks nothing in return. It is the love of God working in the lives of men and women. This is the love that may well be the salvation of our civilization. So that kind of lays it out, that it's big. It's so much bigger. It's love for the opposers. It's love for the people who are challenging us the most, which I can only imagine trying to open my heart that wide to. But our program, we want our program, we sat down this summer to talk about what we want to focus on this year. We were so aware.
I want to just go back for a moment to what you were saying about loving the opposer, to kind of tie it into what we were talking with Earth Ashanti about, and, you know, finding it in our being. And this is like such a radical concept as I'm even like bringing this up, like whatever you're doing right now, if you're like thinking of the opposition, somebody that you strongly have, you know, feelings about, and are able to look a bit deeper than the opposition you have, that often the people that are creating and recreating this pain and suffering in our world or in our personal lives are experiencing it so greatly on themselves, whether they're doing it to themselves or whether somebody else is doing it to them, or it's, you know, the way that they're seeing the world or thinking about the world, they are too in a great amount of suffering. And to be able to send them love, to just go, you know, I love you, and how it can transform the experience that you're personally having with them in that moment, and eventually transform your view of the world to eventually, you know, be able to imagine a world where we do have a beloved community, where people can come to each other and express their grievances rather than hold them hostage within themselves and then take it out in other ways, because those feelings don't go away. The pain and suffering doesn't go away just by pretending that it doesn't exist. Only through focusing on it, loving it, and transmuting it into something different.
Yeah, that's true. And it's so huge. Dr. King was thinking of it in terms of when people trying to cross the bridge fighting for or marching for the right to vote were being beaten with billy clubs, or when children trying to go to school, to integrate schools, were being washed down with fire hoses, and and still keeping love in your heart for those people who are holding the hoses and the billy clubs. So I'm not there, but it's a wonderful vision, and certainly one to imagine that if we could be there, then that violence seems like it would subside. And that was Dr. King's deep vision, that it would if we keep our hearts at that open and inclusive. So
here we go.
So can I tell you about our program?
Yes, please tell us about the program.
Okay, so we sat down to think about what's going on in our world today, and we were overwhelmed when we thought about not only the Black Lives Matter movement, which is obviously connected with Dr. King, it's the next civil rights movement, what's rising right now, but there's Islamophobia, and there's the refugees from the Middle East and Africa crossing the Mediterranean Sea and drowning and starving, and there's the war in Syria, and there's the terrible conflict in Palestine and Israel, and there's the Mexican immigrants trying to cross this country fleeing from violence and being sent back to violence. And, you know, everywhere we turn, and the homeless people on our streets, on our very streets in Chico, while so many of us eat well and sleep in warm beds, but there are so many homeless. So we are attempting to embrace it all in this event, and we have a couple of speakers who will be talking specifically about the populations that they represent. One is Bill Such, who was recently worked with the Jesus Center, and will be talking about the homeless situation, and his title is Looking Out for the Other in Public Space. And we also have the imam from the Chico Islamic Center, Abdul Haq, who will be talking about Islamophobia. And the title of his is All Humans Are Created Equal. And we also will have a wonderful, amazing video clip to start us out that has pictures of people demanding, demonstrating, fighting, singing, dancing for justice in all different groups of people all over the world, and in many different population groups. And it's so amazing to see all these different people saying, yes, yes, we can do this. What do we want? We want justice now, you know, and demanding justice, and people are listening. You know, when enough of us rise up, people listen. And that's one of our goals, is to inspire action more. So,
well, thank you so much for that description of what to expect on the program, the Martin Luther King Jr. Remembrance Celebration that's happening this Sunday, the 17th, and it starts at 3 o'clock in the plaza, and then 6 o'clock?
4 o'clock.
Okay, 3 o'clock in the plaza, and then 4 o'clock at Trinity Methodist.
Right.
So if you miss them in the plaza, meet them at Trinity Methodist. Thank you so much, Emily Alma, for joining us.
Can I say one more thing real quick?
Very quickly.
Okay. Just there's also going to be some really great music, some really uplifting music as part of the program.
Come for the entertainment, stay for the community. So
sounds good.
Absolutely. You. You're so very welcome, and thank you for joining us. Ecotopia is up next. Thank you for tuning in to KZFR.